You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12. This is Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks. Joining me for Victory Monday, Rob Rang. Going to have a lot of fun the next couple days breaking down another thrilling matchup at CenturyLink Field that went down to the final minute. Help support your local businesses, whether they're your corner stores, coffee spots, or favorite shops. Local businesses have always been on your team, supporting you and your community. But right now, more than ever, local businesses need our support. So let's be there for them. The next time you go shopping, make the choice to shop at local businesses and look for the contactless symbol and tap to pay with a contactless Visa to help support your community, because where and how you shop matters. Visa, everywhere you want to be. Official partner of the NFL. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. It feels like this has been a broken record the last couple weeks, but injuries continue to ravage teams around the league. The Seahawks, again, are no exception. But I guess, Rob, the good news coming from Pete Carroll today, all the guys that got injured, they had their MRIs done. None of them are going to need surgery. None of them have super significant injuries. You might have a couple guys out for a week or two, but overall, it looks like they dodged a bunch of bullets this week with key players going down, most notably with Chris Carson, because he's the one that looked like he had the most severe injury yesterday. Luckily, MRI showed that all of his ligaments are intact, just a mild knee sprain after he was under that dirty tackle by Tristan Hill.
Yeah, I think that's a good spot to start off, Corbin. I mean, it's, you know, not only was it a dirty tackle by Tristan Hill, a player who, when he was at Central Florida, I mean, he had a reputation for being a kind of a bad guy, and that's one of the reasons why he dropped to where he did in the draft, despite undeniable talent. And you know, it was a cheap shot, kind of a classic rollover that was basically just designed to create more pain on the player. I don't know if he was trying to create a new injury, but at the same time, it was essentially a cheap shot. I mean, the running back, Chris, in this case, Chris Carson, was already on the ground, and Tristan Hill, well over 300 pounds, is rolling around like he's, you know, like he's on his bed or something, and he is basically twisting around the leg of Chris Carson. So, you know, I think that the Seahawks were really fortunate, as you said, that they did have a number of injuries between Chris Carson, Jamal Adams, the rookie Damian Lewis going down with injuries. I mean, all of those injuries at the time in which they happened looked like they could be very serious. So for Pete Carroll to have provided that update for us today, and it looks like that all of these injuries are going to be a week or two in nature rather than the season-ending injuries, unfortunately, we saw a week ago against the New England Patriots. I think that this is great news for the Seahawks. And obviously, as you said, on a Victory Monday, it just makes it that much sweeter.
As a former running back, I just cringed in the press box when I saw the replay of this injury, because even when I was in high school, I remember a guy trying to do that to me. And I can tell you right now, they call those gator tackles, where you just keep rolling and pulling on the leg, and you can severely injure the ball carrier when you do that. I can tell you right now that that had to be done with intent. There is no way that that was an accident. He had him down to the ground. He didn't need to do that. So there was something behind it, whether he's going to be willing to admit it or not. Those are the kind of plays, and you could see players like KJ Wright and Quandre Diggs coming to the defense of Chris Carson on social media last night, that there is no room for that kind of a play in this game. And he's going to get fined. I think a play like that should be suspended. If you're going to have players that have targeting penalties get ejected from games and miss time, a play like that, that is just as malicious and can rip up players' ankles and knees, there's no room for that in the game. How do you get people to stop doing that? You punish them accordingly. And I just don't know that a fine is enough. I think that he should have been suspended. That was a very dirty play. You also add in the fact that he had a pretty nasty roughing the passer penalty against Russell Wilson, as you mentioned. He just has a little bit of a reputation for being that kind of a player, and he lived up to it yesterday. Those kind of things just cannot happen on the field. As far as the other injuries, Jamal Adams injured his groin. It's a first-degree groin strain. So Pete Carroll said he's probably going to have a difficult time playing this weekend, but I think you probably see him back within 2 weeks. This seems like this is a timetable where he's not going to miss much time. Maybe he makes a really good recovery and can play this weekend. They're not going to rule him out yet. But he seems like he and maybe Jordan Brooks with his MCL sprain, those two are probably the least likely to be able to suit up this weekend. But both of them, far better synopsises than maybe they anticipated when they suffered their injuries. Brooks got taken out on a cut block by Ezekiel Elliott that he just didn't see coming. And so that's a play that you can blow out a knee really easily. So they're lucky that his injury wasn't any worse than it was. And Damian Lewis with just a regular ankle sprain, that's a really good injury for him to have as far as coming back quickly. If it was a high ankle sprain, then I'd be worried about him missing extended time. But I think he's got a pretty good chance to be able to play against the Dolphins on Sunday. Maybe they'll rest him because of how well Jordan Simmons played in his place and then bring him back for the Vikings game in Week 5. But overall, considering the circumstances, as you mentioned, some of these injuries did not look good when they happened, particularly the Carson one. I thought for sure that he injured a ligament or he injured his ankle or something. I thought for sure he was going to miss extended time. He's another guy that it sounds like there may be a chance he plays against the Dolphins. Considering how bad things looked, I don't think the Seahawks could have asked for much better news on this front.
No, I absolutely agree. I mean, again, these are some of your absolute best players, you know, in Jamal Adams and in Chris Carson. Damian Lewis, we've talked about this, Corbin, and we really think that he is having a really strong start to his season. A big reason why Seattle has been as productive as they have on offense is because the offensive line as a whole has gelled better than we ever thought that was going to be possible. And so Lewis, and the impact that he is having, as well as give Jordan Simmons some credit. When he stepped in, it was basically just, the same old, same old. I mean, good quality play up front. So I was pleased about that. And again, with Jordan Brooks, I'm happy that you mentioned it. I failed to mention the first round pick and going down with that injury. But again, all of these could have been very serious injuries. And for the Seahawks basically to have exited this game with the victory and relatively unscathed on the injury front, I think is very positive news.
It's also worth noting the Seahawks were without two other players in the secondary. Quentin Dunbar, who Carroll said on Friday had a pretty good chance of playing in this game, was inactive, still dealing with some knee issues. And Lano Hill woke up with a sore hip, and so that he couldn't play in the game either. And that forced Ryan Neal to be promoted to the roster. Ryan Neal ended up having the biggest play of the game with an interception to close out the game and give the Seahawks a victory. And so Seattle was able to get some contributions from some other players, but they certainly are really banged up. Lano Hill and Quentin Dunbar both have a good chance potentially of being back next weekend too. So there's reinforcements coming. They really lucked out because there could have been some really devastating injuries after already losing Bruce Irvin and Marquise Blair last week. You could have been down several more defenders for an extended period of time. Now it looks like you might be without a few of these guys for maybe a week or two, and then you're going to get them back, and hopefully you have a better run of health as you get deeper into the season and players get more used to being out on the field. That's what every team is hoping for. That's what we as writers and reporters are hoping for as well. You never want to see injuries. Coming up in the second quarter, it's time for our Monday mailbag segment. A lot of defensive questions from you guys, the 12s. We're going to tackle as many as we can. We'll be right back. You're listening to Locked On Seahawks Podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. It doesn't matter if you're a professional athlete, a stay-at-home parent, or you spend 8 hours a day in an uncomfortable office chair. Everyone needs support to make it through the day. Luckily, our friends at CBDMD have an amazing duo that can help you relax, regroup, and recharge when life gets chaotic. CBD Freeze with Menthol is an award-winning product that offers instant cooling relief for muscles and joints in a convenient and easy-to-use roller or shareable squeeze tube. CBD Recover combines CBD with inflammation-fighting compounds like arnica and vitamin B6 to give you the support you need where it matters most. And to make it even easier to try this amazing duo of topicals and everything else CBDMD has to offer, they're offering all of our listeners 25% off your next order when you use the promo code LOCKEDONNFL at checkout. Once again, it's CBDMD.com, promo code LOCKEDONNFL for 25% off your purchase of superior CBD oil products from CBDMD. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. This is your host, Corbin Smith. Joining me for our Victory Monday episode, my co-host, Rob Rang. Later in the show, we're going to look at the good, the bad, and the ugly on the defensive side of the football for the Seahawks. Obviously, the last two categories there, we might have quite a few topics to discuss because Seattle, again, had a pretty rough outing on defense, but there were some positives, so we're going to be breaking that down. Let's get to our Locked On mailbag here. Question number one coming from Dominic tweets, given how well the run defense has played, do the Seahawks really need Damon Harrison? Seems like a luxury item.
Well, I think that's a great question. I don't know that they do. I really have been impressed by the play of the young run stuffers that they have in Brian Monet and Anthony Rush. I think that I've been intrigued by what they can offer. Again, the fact that they are young, they are inexpensive. And I do believe that this would be a little bit of a luxury addition. At the same time, you also are just getting into your NFL schedule, and you're going to be going against more and more teams that are going to be looking to try to run the football right down your throat and be able to keep Russell Wilson off of the field. So I think that if the Seahawks are able to add Damon Harrison, then that would be the type of move that can help put you over the top.
See, I think you absolutely want to add him, and I'm with you. I think that Brian Monet and Anthony Rush have played really well. But Damon Harrison, I still think, has a lot left in the tank. Everybody's pointing to last year saying he had a disappointing year in Detroit. Well, everybody had a disappointing year in Detroit. It was a horrible season there, and a lot of players wanted out, and he was one of them. And I think just giving him an opportunity to play for a contender, and he's had nothing to do with this. He's been a great player for a long time, but think about it. When he signed with the Giants, Eli Manning was in his decline, and it ended up being a very steep one at quarterback. And then he ends up with the Lions, and Matt Stafford's missed a bunch of games due to injury the last few years, and they have a bunch of other issues on defense. And so he really has not played for a quality football team for most of his career. I think he's only played in one playoff game, and that was with the Giants. Early in his career, the Jets didn't have a quarterback either. So he's never played on a team that's had a guy like Russell Wilson. I still think Damon Harrison can be a monster in the middle. You put him with Puna Ford and Jaron Reed, and of course you can keep Brian Monet on the roster too. And I like Anthony Rush a lot. I just think Damon Harrison is still a really good football player. So it comes down to price. If he's going to cost too much, then obviously the Seahawks may not want to explore that. But they are obviously interested, and they have been in for quite some time. And this is a former first-team All-Pro that I think still has a lot of really good football left in him and can help this defense. Cold One tweets, why is the defense having such a hard time getting off the field on third down? This has really been a huge problem the last 2 weeks, Rob.
Yeah, I mean, I wish I could answer this question in 10 seconds and be able to provide you the answer that Ken Norton and Pete Carroll have not yet thought of. The reality is that the Seahawks lack consistent pass rush. We all know that. We also all know that the NFL and the way that they have changed their rules has dramatically shifted the focus on offense. And so offenses do have better opportunities. There's not nearly the number of penalties being called, at least offensive holding. And how many times have you seen the Seahawks be called for holding so far this year? That's not all just because Jermaine Effetti is now playing right guard in Chicago. It's because the rules have been set up to allow points to be scored. That's going to have more fantasy football people watching TV, and that's going to generate that much more money for the NFL. I think the Seahawks are one of those teams that is being, the statistics make it look like they are performing at a lower level than they actually are. I think it's very interesting that when the Seahawks have to be able to stop somebody, that's when the turnovers show up. That's when the sacks start showing up. I do think there is some kind of playing coy a little bit with the way the Seahawks are kind of doing this, but there's no doubt about it. You mentioned it earlier, Corbin, that we're going to be doing the good, the bad, and the ugly. I can tell you right now, the ugly is going to be Seattle's inability to stop any opposing quarterback to this point, so I certainly understand the question.
Bobby Wagner yesterday, I have never seen him so somber after winning a game. And this was one of the big things that he was so frustrated about, the inability to get off the field. Now, they were under 50% for third down rate, the Cowboys. So they improved this week as a defense compared to the week before when the Patriots went 7 for 12. But you also have to add in the fact the Cowboys converted both their fourth down opportunities in this game. One of those, I think they probably didn't. Looking back at the replay, it looked like Elliott came up short and got a really, really beneficial spot. But nonetheless, they've had a lot of trouble with extended drives. And when you have a defense that's had as many holes, especially in the secondary, the passing game as this team has had, then you are just providing more opportunities for really good quarterbacks to be able to torch your back half of the defense. And that's what happened yesterday. That's what happened the 2 weeks prior. There have been opportunities for them to get off the field, and they just aren't executing. I think the biggest problem, I hate to keep bringing this up, but it's the pass rush. There still are way too many plays where the quarterback can drop back, can pick daisies for 10 years, and then throw the football. And we saw some glimpses yesterday of a pass rush, but it's still not close to where it needs to be. If you want to win this brutal division, and you want to make a deep playoff run, potentially get to the Super Bowl, you got to have a pass rush, and if you can't get to the quarterback, I don't care if it's 3rd and 5 or it's 3rd and 15, you get players like Dak Prescott time to throw the football back there. He is going to convert a large chunk of those for first downs, especially when you got receivers like he's got on the outside. You can only cover for so long. So to me, that's the biggest issue, is finding ways to consistently generate pressure. And that leads to a really good question here from Ryan M. He tweets, seemed like rushing 3 at the end of the game yesterday was effective. Think we do more of that. I actually was thinking about this in the middle of the game yesterday, Rob. They were trying every way possible to ramp up extra pressure, and ultimately it seemed to burn them. Late in the game, they kind of adjusted.
Yeah, we talked about this, that I thought that the Seahawks were not going to be quite as interested in just pinning their ears back and trying to get after Dak Prescott, because he does have so many receivers around him. This is a very smart quarterback and one playing the same offense for the last several years. And so there isn't the transition for him that there had been for, say, Cam Newton, which is a much more shocking result to him to throw up the big yards that he did against the Seahawks, especially after the way that New England focused so much on running the ball in their first week's win against Miami. Dak Prescott, on the other hand, has been just tearing it up for every game, not only this year, but in the last several years. And so it wasn't surprising to see Seattle try and go after him at least a little bit initially with some blitzes. But as you just mentioned, Corbin, I mean, he was having some success with that. And I think that the 3-man rushes and then basically using Shaquem Griffin as a spy at times, I think that started to confuse Prescott a little bit. He wasn't able to scare the Seahawks linebackers and safeties by him running the way that Russell Wilson does so effectively. And then it also, of course, left more defensive backs to be able to tackle those wide receivers once they actually did catch the ball. So I think that the evolving defensive strategy was one of the reasons why the Seahawks were able to make just barely enough plays to actually escape CenturyLink with the victory.
I was thinking this midway through the second quarter. There was a stretch there where they were not only bringing Jamal Adams seemingly every play, but they were blitzing slot corners. Ugo Amadi came on a couple blitzes, and you saw them bring in Trey Flowers on a couple plays. They were just trying to find any way that they could get pressure on Dak Prescott, and it gets to a point where, you've heard the saying, live by the blitz, die by the blitz. They were starting to die by the blitz because it wasn't getting home, and you had receivers running all over the place wide open. And so I do like it that last drive, they put in an athletic player like Shaquem Griffin who can play that spy role out there and, didn't bring near as much pressure. They just had 3 rushers coming, and they basically said, okay, Dak Prescott, we're going to put extra coverage back here, see if you can beat us. And ironically, they were having more success getting pressure when they did that, and some of it was because Prescott was actually holding on to the football longer. So it was one of those times you could see where pressure doesn't always come from the blitz, and sometimes you can end up creating pressure with less guys coming by having more coverage back there. And so Seahawks did a nice job adjusting. Would have been nice to see that maybe a little earlier in the game, but Seahawks Girl tweets, could it be that Ken Norton Jr. is the problem rather than the players and injuries? Our defense needs a new plan. This has kind of been a broken record the last couple years. I do think the injuries have been a major problem that we can't completely dismiss. You don't want to make those an excuse, but this is already a team with a lot of new pieces in the secondary trying to gel, and yet they haven't been able to play full games together.
Yeah, and I think that that's a big part of it, Corbin, is I think that they have not been able to gel together. I think you have so much transition in the secondary. That's a big part of it. You, of course, just frankly lack the Jimmies and the Joes along the defensive line. I mean, you can do all whatever X's and O's and coach speak that you want. It looks great up on the on the grease board as you're writing up these plays and all that kind of stuff. Let's face it. I mean, Ken Norton Jr. has been a very effective defensive coordinator for a long time. Pete Carroll, no, his success speaks for itself as well. But at the same time, they are not the most innovative guys at this point. They kind of believe in what they believe and do what they do. And again, frankly, I think that their success speaks for itself. But at the same time, yeah, I think that at times that it does get a little frustrating when you're seeing mostly vanilla looks get beaten. And then when the Seahawks do try to get aggressive and do some blitzing and things, that sometimes that doesn't work either. And then as you just said, sometimes you're going to die by the blitz, and I don't think that the Seahawks want to be that team that they are going to just risk it all play after play after play and be a highly aggressive blitzing team. But I think they get frustrated too, and that was one of the reasons why you did see so many blitzes and why the team did adjust as the game went on, because clearly this is still very much a work in progress.
Now Bill B tweets, other than Ryan Kerrigan and Justin Houston, who else do you think the Seahawks could try to acquire in a trade? So I will say this right up front, Rob. I don't think Justin Houston's going anywhere because the Indianapolis Colts right now are 2-1, and the team that a lot of people thought was going to be the favorite in that division is sitting at 0-3. Deshaun Watson and the Texans, the Titans are off to a hot start, but the Colts are right there in the thick of that division race. Seems very unlikely they're going to be getting rid of a veteran defensive end that still can put pressure on opposing quarterbacks. Kerrigan, on the other hand, maybe that's a player they could make work. I just think the big issue right now is draft capital after trading for Jamal Adams.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. I think that right now the players that are out there, I think that Kerrigan makes the most sense. He's playing for a Washington team that frankly is going nowhere fast at this point with their young quarterback still just kind of getting going. I really like the young quarterback Dwayne Haskins at Washington, but at the same time, again, they're obviously not competing for a Super Bowl at this point the way that the Seahawks are, the way that the Indianapolis Colts might be, to kind of throw that out there. But with Ryan Kerrigan, because he plays on a team that does have a great deal of talent, not the least of which is, of course, this last year's number 2 overall pick in Chase Young, there is a possibility out there. Now, I happened to watch Kerrigan pretty closely this last week against with Washington playing Cleveland, and he did not have his most impressive game. He actually had a really silly, unveteran-like penalty where he was the one called offsides on kind of a silly play. And so it made me think, well, I wonder if, as time passing by, former first-round pick Ryan Kerrigan a little bit, I still think that he would be a very effective player for the Seahawks. And if he was available, that then John Schneider would absolutely be exploring those possibilities. But you said it, Corbin, that they just lack the draft capital to be able to make a big-time splashy trade for the type of player that I think a lot of Seahawks fans are hoping for. And if you were going to trade a veteran for a veteran, then that complicates things significantly. I will say this, one of the positions that Washington is currently lacking, if we're going to focus in on the Washington football team for a moment, would be the running back position, and we know that Seattle is pretty gifted at running back.
You get Rashad Penny back before the trade deadline, potentially. That is something to consider here, because if you've still got Chris Carson healthy at that point, you've got Carlos Hyde, who isn't getting a lot of opportunities right now, and really they are missing having Rashad Penny right now. They don't have that running back that has that third gear that Rashad Penny can play with that we saw last year before he got hurt. And if he's still that same player when he comes back, everything I've been told, he looks fantastic right now, and that he's got a really good chance to be able to be back when he's eligible after week 6. So you get Penny back, and you have Chris Carson still there. You like Travis Homer and DJ Dallas. I don't think it's out of the question that a guy like Carlos Hyde could be somebody that's dangled a little bit. I don't know why Washington would want to trade for an older running back like that, but certainly you could throw him into a package and maybe that would allow you to trade a little later draft pick. I also think maybe considering one of your receivers, especially if Josh Gordon at some point is reinstated, you might be able to deal one of your receivers away too, and that's a position Washington's got a couple really nice young guys, but they could certainly use another playmaker on the outside. So I'm not going to rule it out, but I think it's going to be very difficult for them to come up with a trade package that Washington's going to want that would make sense middle of the season, as nice of an addition as Kerrigan would be. I think it's going to be tough to pull off. When we return for the third quarter, we're going to break down some defensive takeaways from yesterday's victory over the Cowboys, the good, the bad, the ugly. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. As an avid weightlifter and distance runner, I'm always looking for an edge when it comes to nutrition, seeking delicious, healthy protein bars without the crazy additives. Since being diagnosed with celiac disease, my options have been pretty limited. Until now. Enter in the Built Bar, a low-calorie, low-sugar, high-protein, gluten-free protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. Built Bar now comes in 18 mouth-watering flavors, including 6 new delicious flavors such as caramel brownie and cookies and cream. My all-time favorite is peanut butter brownie, which is 20 grams of protein, just 3 grams of sugar, and 3 grams of net carbs. Since I had my first Built Bar, I never go without one when I hit the weight room or go for a jog. All Built Bars are 100% chocolate, nut and gluten-free, soft and easy to chew, and don't have the nasty aftertaste of competing protein bars. Sound too good to be true? Go to BuiltBar.com and build your own custom box with your choice of flavors using the code LOCKEDON for $10 off. You will also receive a free cooler with your first purchase while supplies last. So what are you waiting for? Change your workout game by going to BuiltBar.com and entering code LOCKEDON for $10 off. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, Victory Monday edition. I'm your host, Corbin Smith. Joining me as always, Rob Rang. It's time for some defensive takeaways. The Seahawks getting their third win of the year, still unblemished at 3-0. It's been quite a ride to get to this point. They've been through a lot of crazy endings here to open the season, but they are sitting atop the NFC West all by their lonesome. Cardinals and Rams both losing this weekend. The 49ers won, but they lost early in the season. So every team in this division is at least 2-1. We knew this was going to be a very good division, but Seattle, for right now, sitting at the top of the best division in football with an undefeated record. Let's talk about some good things on defense. I know a lot of people out there may be wondering, well, what are you going to possibly talk about here? But I know they gave up over 500 yards, but we have to start off with the turnovers. They had 3 turnovers, and it's really 4 when you consider the safety that Brian Monet generated, bringing down Ezekiel Elliott in the end zone in the first quarter. But you had the pick by Shaquille Griffin, you had the end interception by Ryan Neal, and of course, at the beginning of the half, a huge play by Jaron Reed getting the strip sack. Benson Maioa catches the fumble and returns it for a few yards. A couple plays later, Jacob Hollister's in the end zone, Russell Wilson hits him, and now you've got yourself a 30-15 game. It seemed like the Seahawks were in full control at that point, and a lot of it had to do with those timely turnovers. Yes, they're giving up a ton of yards, but they're also making the big plays when they absolutely need them.
Yep, you took the words right out of my mouth, Corbin. The turnovers, I think, would be what you have to say here is the good. Because this was a game that, you know, in terms of time of possession, in terms of yardage, you know, Dallas could have won this football game if not for all of those turnovers. And you took the words right out of my mouth. If you were just to look at it and see that Dak Prescott threw the 2 interceptions, that's just not enough. It really doesn't tell the entire story. Basically, the Seahawks' ability to make the Dallas Cowboys one-dimensional, while the Cowboys did a great job in the pass game, you limited the Dallas Cowboys to 61 total rushing yards, a 2.9 yard average. I mean, Ezekiel Elliott looked like a shadow of himself. 14 attempts for 34 yards.
This run defense is legit.
Absolutely. And that's the thing, is it's not just that the Seattle's run defense is good. It's that Seattle's offense is so damn good that the teams are being forced to abandon their own running games because they have to try and keep up with Russell Wilson. And so it's just a complete different mindset than what the Seahawks have been throughout most of Pete Carroll's time here. So I think if you want to focus in on the good, I would kind of argue with the way that we first mentioned this, in that I think that there's lots of things that are good about Seattle's defense. There's certainly some bad. There's certainly some ugly. But 3-0 is 3-0. And in both the last two games, it was the defense that was on the field at the end that made the big play to give us that victory Monday.
They've really excelled at the bend but don't break mindset so many times early on in this season. They've given up a lot of yards. They've gave up some touchdowns, but they've also made those big turnovers and big fourth down stops and goal line stands, you name it. They have found a way to dig in and get the job done. And this week was more impressive. This really leads into my second point here. When you consider the players that were not on the field, you don't have Bruce Irvin or Marquise Blair. Jamal Adams gets hurt. Jordan Brooks gets hurt. You have Shaquem Griffin playing the last drive, kind of as a spy in the middle. He was rushing some off the edge, too. It was the best that I've seen Shaquem Griffin look in an NFL game. He was very disruptive on that last drive. But you had Alton Robinson out there, defensive end. No Rasheem Green. And obviously, I said Bruce Irvin being gone. Robinson gets his first sack. Ryan Neal, who's in for Jamal Adams, gets the game-winning interception. You had so many guys step up. Those three guys I just mentioned had not been active in either of the first two games, and yet they all made critical plays down the stretch there to help the Seahawks hold on and win this high-scoring affair. And that just shows you the kind of depth, and honestly, it makes you wonder, particularly with Alton Robinson, where have these guys been the first couple weeks of the season as well? Because I thought he looked really good in training camp, and he played really well all four quarters yesterday.
He did, and that was something that we talked about a lot leading up all week, is we knew there was going to be a possibility that the Cowboys would be without their all-galaxy left tackle Tyron Smith, who had been out the previous week, but I still very much believe that he would be able to make it back for this game against the Seahawks. He was unable to do so. I thought that the Seahawks might try to counter that by sending even more speed rushers against the Dallas's two tackles, both of them being severely inexperienced. And again, I think that the fact that the Seahawks were not able to create more pressure and generate more sacks is concerning. But again, to me, one of the good things about it is that they were able to get it done when they absolutely needed to.
Let's go to the bad now. These are things that, you know, it's maybe not the worst thing possible, but certainly there's a lot of room for improvement. I am going to go with the pass rush here for this particular category because there were glimpses. They got 10 quarterback hits on Dak Prescott, but he dropped back and threw 57 times. And so that is not the type of pressure rate that, as a defensive coach, I would be looking for. I need to see more consistency from this group. You're getting some plays every single game from guys like LJ Collier and DeMontre Moore, Jaron Reed with that strip sack, but you want to see more consistency from the entire group as a whole. And really, the best that this group has looked rushing the passer was that last drive that the Cowboys were trying to move down the field. You saw a lot more pressure in the interior. You saw a lot more athleticism out there. That was the most disruptive that they've been. But there's been so many lulls. And this is one of the reasons you're seeing teams have these explosive downfield pass plays and these really quick drives as a result is there's just not enough consistent pressure, and it's why they're trying to bring more blitzes, because the front line isn't getting the job done, and quarterbacks can just sit there and pick apart the secondary. I don't care if you have four in his prime Deion Sanders back there in your secondary. If your pass rush is allowing the quarterback to sit there for 6 or 7 seconds, it doesn't matter who's playing back there. Receivers are going to get open, especially in today's NFL where the rules are geared toward offensive players. And so the pass rush is still an area that continues to hurt this football team. We saw some promising signs yesterday, but it's going to come down to, can they figure out the rotations to get different guys in there that are more effective? Are they going to get more consistent play out of Jaron Reed? We saw more yesterday out of him as a pass rusher. If they can do that, and they can just be a mid-level pass rush, this defense instantly is much better.
Absolutely. And I agree with you. This is, whether you want to talk about the pass rush as being the bad or the ugly, and either way, the point is the same. As you mentioned, Dak Prescott had 57 pass attempts, and that doesn't even include the two other pass attempts in which he got sacked. So basically, roughly, he had 60 pass attempts, and the Seahawks sacked him twice. So, you know, my public school education here, math, I know that's basically one in every 30 passing attempts that you're able to bring the quarterback down. Yeah, pretty ugly. And then you look on the Seahawks side of the ball, Russell Wilson was 27 of 40, so 40 passing attempts, and he got sacked four times. And we know that Russell Wilson runs out of more sacks than he actually gets hit.
It could have been far worse.
Exactly. So it really shows how much the Seattle has struggled in terms of being able to generate that pass rush. But besides just picking on the pass rush, I kind of have a little bit of a bone to pick and something else that I thought was a little bit ugly at times. And I talked about this, I believe, when it was Nick and I on Friday's show, kind of making some bold predictions and things. I really thought that it was going to be incumbent on Quandre Diggs as your free safety to basically play that last line of defense. We knew that the three receivers that Dallas primarily focused in on, Amari Cooper, CeeDee Lamb, and then Michael Gallup, that those were three guys who had exceptional short area quickness. They could be going one way, turn around, change directions, and be gone. And so that was one of the reasons I was concerned that Dallas would be able to generate big, gashing plays in the passing game. And unfortunately, Quandre Diggs, he had some plays where I thought that his pursuit angle was a little bit off. Ugo Amadi on one particular play down by the end zone wound up making a tackle that Quandre Diggs was unable to make. I think that we talked so much about the safety position, how a source of strength that is for the Seahawks. I didn't think that it was as good yesterday as it has been, and some of that was due to the injury to Jamal Adams, but some of it was because Quandre Diggs wasn't quite as effective as he's been in the past, and so that's something I think to kind of keep an eye on moving forward.
Yeah, I'm glad I'm not alone on that, because I actually thought Quandre, that might have been the worst game that he's played since the Seahawks traded for him. And I'm including the playoff games when he was clearly not close to 100%. I don't know if it's because last week he missed most of the game being ejected. He's still trying to get his feet under him. He looked pretty good in the first game against the Atlanta Falcons, but he just wasn't on his A game. And this defense, that free safety position is so important, especially when you're playing a team as good as the Dallas Cowboys that has so many explosive weapons. And I've got to say this for the ugly. Yes, the pass rush has had an impact on this. Yes, injuries have had an impact on this. But as Pete Carroll said today, he's not going to be happy until the deep ball is eliminated. And yesterday, the deep ball was all over the yard for the Dallas Cowboys. You saw Shaquille Griffin give up a 52-yard completion to Michael Gallup. That drive was a three-play, 94-yard drive. You cannot have those. The Seahawks gave up one other drive that I believe was only four plays that went over 90 yards. You just can't do that. And there were so many drives like that within 30 seconds to a minute or so that the Cowboys were in scoring position and they put points on the board. And Cedric Wilson is the number four, maybe number five receiver on the Dallas Cowboys. And I watched him a lot when he played at Boise State. He's a good football player, but he's had five receptions in his entire career, none this season, and he goes off for 107 yards in this game. He had a 42-yard touchdown and a 40-yard touchdown that capped off that drive that Gallup had, the 52-yarder. You can't give up plays like that. Five different receivers had at least one 28-yard reception against this Seahawks defense. Several of those guys had more than one, including Wilson. You're going to be very hard-pressed. I don't care if your quarterback on the other side in Russell Wilson is the best player in the NFL right now. You're going to be hard-pressed to consistently win games when you are giving up that many plays of 20-plus yards in the passing game. It is eventually going to come back, and it is going to bite you hard. Because there is going to be a game where Russell Wilson is not all-world like he has been these first 3 weeks, where he misses some throws, the offense isn't clicking as exactly as it has been. If your defense is giving up plays like that, it's going to get ugly.
You're absolutely right. And I'm happy that you mentioned Cedric Wilson because, yeah, as I mentioned before, there were three primary wide receivers I thought the Seahawks had to be concerned about. And it wasn't just those three that wound up hurting him. As you mentioned with Cedric Wilson, 5 catches, so he matched his career high in this one game against the Seahawks, for 107 yards, and those 2 touchdowns, both of them 40-plus yard scores. You know, you just look at the yards after the catch for all of Dallas's receivers. I mean, it was just absolutely staggering how many times that not only was Dak Prescott able to create enough time for himself to throw some of those just absolute lasers that he threw, but that also the Seahawks weren't able to make quick tackles. I mean, think of how many times we had seen the Legion of Boom that they might give up a reception, but the split second that the ball hit that receiver's hands, then he was going down. Richard Sherman was going to be tackling. Cam Chancellor was going to be pulverizing him, you know, or whatever the case might be. It just seemed like every single time the Cowboys made a reception this time, they had enough time to turn around, make a move, and be able to generate extra yards after the catch. Amari Cooper, even though he was struggling with injuries in this game, you know, he had 21 yards after the catch. Ezekiel Elliott, 34. Cedric Wilson's, we talked about, 70 yards after the catch. Dalton Schultz, a tight end, had 30 yards after the catch. And so that, to me, was one of the concerns, is that Seattle not only isn't able to generate the pass rush that you're looking for, they're also not tackling quite as well. Now, that's something that to be expected. We talked about this before. They're without training camp. Everybody's kind of working their way into the into real football shape. So you hope that these things are going to improve, but considering all the durability concerns and all that, you know, I think this is going to be a storyline to watch certainly throughout the entire season.
And I don't even know if it's tackling. I feel like the Seahawks tackling overall for the most part has not been bad, especially on special teams. They've been playing really well on special teams, tackling on kick and punt coverage. It seems like the pursuit angles are really off. You mentioned that with Diggs. You can see that with a lot of their players. It doesn't seem like they're taking good angles. So Ken Norton Jr., I know you run it every day anyway, but I would double your time on pursuit drill, because it looks to me like that right now might be the biggest issue that this team is dealing with, along with having some coverage breakdowns as well. Make sure to follow me on Twitter at CorbinSmithNFL. You can follow Rob at Rob Rang. Subscribe to our show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, whatever your preferred podcast platform is, by going to our website, LockedOnSeahawks.com. Coming up on tomorrow's episode, we're going to look back at past matchups against the Miami Dolphins and some offensive takeaways from Sunday's game. Enjoy the rest of your Monday. Go Hawks!